and welcome to episode 213 of Board Game Blitz, a podcast about all things board games that you can listen to in less time than it takes to get a tattoo. Board Game Blitz is sponsored by Gray Fox Games. This week, we're talking about BGG game pages. First, we discuss a couple games we've played recently, Guilty, Houston 2015, and Cora Quest. Then, we talk about the makeup of a Board Game Geek game page and which parts we find the most valuable. And now, here are your hosts,
Ambi
and Crystal. Before we review some games, it is time to announce the winner of our 8th anniversary contest.
Yay!
So thank you so much to everyone who entered and who the people who are supporting us on Ko-fi. We really appreciate it. And we got a lot of really great suggestions from you all for future things to do on the show. So thank you so much for that as well. And without further ado, our winner is Nicole M. Yay! Congratulations, Nicole. We will be reaching out to you, if we haven't already, to get your information to pass over to Gray Fox Games so we can get you your Midgard bundle of games.
Congratulations. Recently, I got a review copy of Guilty Houston 2015, designed by Johan Cervais, published by Yellow, 2024 game. So it's a new game, just came out, I think. But Guilty is a new series of murder mystery deduction games, kind of like Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective or Suspects in that vein of game. So if you like those types of games, then the Guilty series is more of that, and you'll probably like it, which is why I was excited to get this review copy. So in Guilty Houston 2015, the story is you're researching the murder of a girl who was murdered in prison. So it's for ages 16 plus. Due to theme, and I'll try not to spoil too much of it, but the way the game works is it's card-based, kind of like Suspects, but it has a time track. So there's a little board that you fold out, or that you unfold out on the table, that has images of the different suspects that you can talk to, and then there's cards that you put out on the board. Like, there's also images of the different rooms, and the cards, you like put them in the different rooms where you find it, and then you can choose any of those cards that you've found to go to and like investigate. And so when you flip them over, you read, most of the time it's like a blurb that you read, and sometimes there's pictures too that give you information, but they also have, a lot of them have a little time symbol that means that you flip this time deck over. So there's a deck of cards that have the time on it, kind of like you flip a card over and it represents like minutes passing. But when you flip it over, on the other side, it sometimes says some flavor text, but sometimes says like, oh, this happens and you can get this new card or like this new information. So that's kind of cool. It adds to the theme. I think that it was more immersive than like Sherlock or Suspects for me because of that time aspect. And also the time deck had a couple of like Robinson Crusoe type things where if you go somewhere, like you have to put something into the time deck maybe, and then it'll come up later.
Those tend to be dangerous.
But like, this is all murder mystery. So it's like you went here and so like the information that you found, it's going to come later or something. Like you're sent something to the lab to analyze. And so like time later, It's analyzed and it comes back. And so you have that information. So that was kind of cool and kind of thematic.
Yeah, that's clever.
Yeah. The game says it takes 3 to 4 hours to complete. We did it in 1 hour because Toby and I read quickly. We didn't read it out loud. We just like read the things to ourselves each time. And we also like didn't want to spend that much time because we are both parents and don't have much time to play games at night. And we wanted to do it in one sitting so that we remember what's going on. You can technically save it, but because there's like a lot of cards that are spread out, we were playing on the floor too. Like we didn't want to put it all back, or I guess we could have left it on the floor, but
that seems dangerous.
Well, it was in our like office area, so the kids don't go in there. But you could technically like, put it back because the cards that you saw are flipped over, and so you can put it away to come back a different day. But we didn't. So yeah, we liked it and it was immersive. One thing that we didn't think that it would need internet searching or anything, but apparently in some of these guilty cases, like you can use your phone and the internet, and for some information you might have wanted to use the internet. We kind of forgot that you could partway through. And we didn't end up using our phones at all because we don't usually like looking up things on the internet in escape room type or like mystery games. We like just focusing on the stuff that we have there. So we didn't understand all of the information and like we didn't get everything that happened. We got a lot of it though, and enough to win, I guess. There's like different endings depending on how much you answer correctly. So at the end, there's going to be some questions that they ask, and it gives you like so many points for getting different parts of the question. Like if you got this detail or this detail. So that's kind of cool how it has like different details and it shows all of the details that you could have gotten, which cards had which information. So yeah, I liked it overall. The theme is definitely for more adults because it's about a murder in prison. So there's lots of adult themes there. And it felt more immersive than a game like Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective because of like the time track. And then also there's pictures and stuff. So that makes it probably more adult theme feeling as well. But yeah, if you like this type of murder mystery game, then I like this series so far. Except for I don't like having to use, well, you didn't have to use the internet, but that was my like more negative part of it, is that it would have helped a lot to use the internet, I think, just because, but that also makes it more immersive because it's like you're a detective, you can look up stuff. It said you can like use your phone, so you can use your phone to look up information while you're there checking things. So yeah, I think that really helps with the immersion too. It's just, that's a personal thing that Toby and I are just anti-phone. But yeah, so that's Guilty Houston 2015, which is, I think, the first of a series of games in the Guilty series by Yellow.
Cool. The game I'm going to be talking about today is Cora Quest. Cora Quest was published in 2022, designed by Dan and Cora Hughes. Art by Cora Hughes and Gary King and a whole bunch of kids who submitted artwork for the game, and published by Bright Eye Games. So Cora Quest is an adventure dungeon crawl game that is kid friendly because it was designed by a kid and her dad. And it started as a school project or a pandemic project for them. Mm-hmm. And then they realized that what they were designing was a pretty awesome game, and they decided to get it published, and they did. And now it is a very popular game, at least in, I would say, hobby board gaming. Mm-hmm. So it is for ages 6+. But I played it with my sister and her two sons, my nephews, who are currently 9 and 5 years old. We did play with some slightly modified rules for our first game, only because my nephews haven't played a lot of complex board games yet, and I didn't want to overwhelm them or my sister, because I think everybody looked at the rule book and was like a little intimidated, and so I didn't, I didn't want to spend too much time explaining rules, so I went through as much as I could, as quickly as I could, and then I was like, okay, we're just going to start playing now. And then I slowly introduced other things when I could, but we specifically ignored certain aspects of the game for our first play, but I could see how those things worked anyway. So in Cora Quest, it is a cooperative game where all of the players pick a hero or multiple heroes to control, and then they pick a quest from the quest book, and you go on an adventure. The dungeons are made up of cards that you flip over to build out the dungeon procedurally, and what cards are in that deck are determined by what quest you chose. So, like, which enemies spawn, and what, like, treasure chests appear, and other facets are going to be specifically determined by the quest you choose. In our quest, we were trying to rescue Wizard Pebble Dash's stolen cheesecake. Mm-hmm. And so we had to find a specific tile that had the cheesecake. And then once we did that and cleared out all of the monsters, we would win. So similar to other dungeon crawl games, it has some familiar mechanisms. Like, you have certain number of actions you can take on your turn. Some of those actions are free. Some of them take one of your main actions, and you can do 2 main actions per turn. The main actions are relatively simple and easy to grasp. My nephews very quickly understood that, like, moving and attacking were the two things that they were going to do the most often. And so, especially with the 5-year-old, I would just, you know, say, like, okay, you're there, and that monster's there, and that monster's over there. Do you want to move, or do you want to attack that guy? And he would very, you know, I want to attack that guy. And so he got into it really, like, he was very excited. I think this is the first time that the two of them have ever played a game of this style before. Mm-hmm. They own a lot of more of the, like, mass market games. Like, they're obsessed with Mousetrap right now. Mm-hmm. I have played Mousetrap this week already, I think, 4 or 5 times. So, wow. What's funny about that is the reason they own Mousetrap is because I, as a joke, bought my sister the world's tiniest Mousetrap game. And they saw that and were loving it. And then Ashley was like, well, you know, there's a full size version of this. And they were like, there's a real game about this. So then she had to get real Mousetrap, which they love. But I digress. Cora Quest is especially neat because there are blank cards that come with the game that you can create your own items. And there is a way online to create your own heroes as well. Mm-hmm. The artwork, like I said, was all submitted by kids. And then their graphic designer made those sketches and drawings more cohesively look like a singular art style. Mm-hmm. But all of the monsters and heroes are adorable and wonderful and just delightful to look at. And it's neat knowing that kids, you know, came up with all of those ideas. And my nephews were really excited about the prospect of potentially getting to make their own stuff in the future.
Yeah, that's exciting.
Yeah. Combat in the game is simple. Only the attacker rolls dice. And I think we were only rolling generally either 1, 2, or 3 dice at a time. There were only 2 colors of dice, red and white. So all of it was, like I said, like easy enough for the kids to grasp mm-hmm. with help. My sister even said when we got done, she was like, I don't know if I could have taught this to them, but since I was there to help, like she, you know, it worked out well. Mm-hmm. I think that even a non-gamer could learn and teach this game, but we were learning it from the rule book as we played, basically.
Yeah, that's hard.
I think, yeah, if I had read it in advance, mm-hmm. it would have been easier. But we still got through an entire scenario with, again, some modified rules. We weren't doing all of the things that you would normally do in a scenario. We were simplifying certain parts of it. But they got the gist of it, and we had so much fun. And they were so excited when we rescued the cheesecake.
Yay!
And yeah, it was great. I don't think I would choose Cora Quest for myself over other more complex dungeon crawlers like Descent 3rd Edition, for instance. But this is a brilliant way to play a dungeon crawling game with kids. Mm-hmm. Like, it was not boring. It was not monotonous. It wasn't uninteresting. Like, some kids' games can be a slog for adults, truly. And this was not that at all. I had so much fun. Like, the heroes during the hero round get to take turns in whatever order they want. And so I would ask my nephews, you know, who should go first this round? Who should go next? And kind of just letting them make decisions that I think they typically don't get to make in other games where you, you know, you have to go in turn order and things like that. It was honestly pretty awesome. We've only played it once so far. I am hopeful that they want to play it again. They seem like they are going to want to. So I give Cora Quest 2 thumbs up.
Nice. Yeah, I need to play it again with my kids sometime. We played like last year or something when my kids, I don't know if we tried when my kids were 3, but my kids are 4 now. And we played like a partial quest, like a short quest, but like a quarter or maybe a half of it. Like, it's separated into 4 quest cards or something. We got to the first one or something. And yeah, like you, I heavily help them be like, okay, do you want to do this or this? And then they roll the dice and they like knocking over the baddies. But we haven't played it in a while. And my kid even made a character, like not the actual character's creation with like the stats and stuff, because he doesn't understand that part. But he like drew his own skeleton character because he wanted a skeleton as his character, not as a bad person.
Of course.
Yeah. So yeah, he did that. And then like I made it little standy for him.
Yeah, I would say like, so the part of the game that we kind of intentionally pushed to the side, is, at least for our first play, there's a threat track that it progresses. Yeah. During over the course of the rounds. And technically when your hero takes their special action, their token goes onto the track and they can't do their special action again until it comes off. We ignored that threat track. track entirely.
Yeah. I forgot about it the first time I played.
Yeah. Instead of doing the normal cleanup mode in like the for the third phase, we basically just did heroes go, enemies go. Heroes go, enemies go. Because that was just a little easier, I think, for a first play. As we were playing, I was kind of telling my sister, you know, over the top of my nephews, like, hey, if we were playing normally, this is what would happen here. And I made sure I told my nephews, we might not be doing all of the rules the way that they are in the book, but as long as it's fair for everyone and we're having fun, then it's okay. I have been desperately trying to, the 5-year-old has been struggling with the idea of losing in games, which I think all kids
do. Yeah.
Yeah. Like it, losing is hard when you're little and you don't. And so this week I have been quizzing him nonstop. I taught him, I said, why do we play games? And when I first asked him, he said, I don't know. And I said, to have fun. And so we've been playing some video games and some board games. And there was one time where he lost and then he won and he was extra excited. And I tried to like tell him, I was like, do you know why you're so excited right now? And he was like, no, why am I so excited? And I was like, because you lost before and that made winning even better. So losing is a good thing. So I'm trying to be that awesome aunt that helps my nephew learn that losing is not only okay, hey, sometimes it's a good thing. So I'm trying to teach the youth, as it were. Hopefully I'm being helpful. He really dotes on me quite a bit, and so I'm using my powers for good, hopefully.
Good.
Our main topic this week is, we made the title a little sensationalist. We called it BGG Breakdown because we are going to look at the makeup of a page, a game page on BoardGameGeek, aka BGG, and kind of go through the pieces and parts of it and what we look at. Like if we're looking up a game on BoardGameGeek, what are the parts that we look at on that page? What do we think is important? What information are we seeking out? What information are we ignoring completely? Because there's a lot of information. I think for people who are unfamiliar with BoardGameGeek as a website, if you were to go to a game page for the first time, it's overwhelming. There's a lot of stuff there.
Yeah, and for me, it also depends on like what I'm looking it up, though. Because if I'm playing a game and then I look it up, then like I already know about the game. So I'm probably looking up something like, what does this play best at? Which actually is like one of the things they have. They have a lot of stuff. And like the little summary at the top is usually pretty helpful for like a first glance. I guess like the rating right there is really big. So
like, that's true. Yeah. And that would be,
that's like probably what people like, see first.
Yeah. Right? Cause it's got a colored background, a big number. And that is the game's rating in the BGG system as rated by BGG users.
Yeah. Oh, and you can click on it to see like the breakdown in the comments, which I never do. I don't usually click on that. I usually click on, so under the title, there's a little blurb and then it says like how many ratings and how many comments. I usually click on that link, but I guess if it's the same link as clicking on the rating maybe, or a similar link. Maybe. No, it's not the same.
Interesting.
Not sure what this link is. Okay. That's rated.
Right. So I was already on the Quora Quest page.
Yeah, and
so,
I was looking at Quora Quest too.
Yeah. And so like the ratings breakdowns for Quora Quest, like the majority of all rankings are 8s. And then there's a lot of 9s, 7s, and 10s. Mm-hmm. And then there's some a sixes. Few 6s. And then everything else, there's like nothing, basically. Yeah.
And then it aggregates that as a 7.9. And that's like the big number that you see.
And that's I would say on BGG, if I see a game is rated 7.9, that's a really good game. I would say on average, I don't typically see games rated above an 8 very often.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then under that part, it has like the number of players, playtime, age. I look at age a lot more now than I used to because children, I have children.
Because children.
Yeah. So under all of these, under the player count, this is the official player count at the big bold, but under it, it has like a community rating, which is really useful for me. I like the community rating. So like under players, if you click into the community, it says what it's best at and people can vote like, oh, it's best at 4. It's not recommended at 1 or something. And so you can see that because like the play count on the box might not be what you want to play it at. Same with the age. The community also rates on like how old of kids they play it with, kind of.
Yeah, Like, in this instance, the community agrees for Core Request that it's 6+ is a correct rating. Mm-hmm. But, like, I played it with a 5-year-old today who isn't super familiar with hobby board games. And while we did modify it, I think with a couple more plays, he could probably handle most of what is in this game. Mm-hmm. Obviously, every kid is different.
It's probably like 6+ without as much help, probably, was what the age.
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't. Like, yeah. The 5-year-old, I don't think could handle this without an adult helping. Mm-hmm.
Do you look at any of the other stuff up in that big, big area?
I honestly, I glance at the weight rating, but I don't put any stock in it. So for those of you who don't look at BGG frequently, one of the ratings on games is the weight. And no, we're not talking about how heavy the box is, although that would be funny. So the weight of a game is generally meaning how complex it is. Mm-hmm. And the rankings go from 1 to 5, 1 being very simple and 5 being incredibly complex. And I have found that sometimes the weight rating is helpful, and in other instances, it's very off. Mm-hmm. So I tend to take that with a grain of salt. But if I am looking up a game that looks more complex, then looking at that weight rating can sometimes give me a better idea of how complex it is.
Yeah, I think the thing with all of these are like community voted. So like the weight rating is just based on community votes and people who play more of one type of game. Like heavier games tend to be skewed lighter because people who are voting on that weight play a bunch of heavy games. So it's like, oh, this game is like light compared to this other super heavy game I play. But compared to the rest of the site, it's not right. So
spiraling even further off of that, you also have to recognize that the people who frequent Board Game Geek enough to be ranking and rating things are more often than not very hardcore hobby gamers. Mm-hmm. So I think sometimes hobby gamers kind of forget that they're hobby gamers. And when they're ranking a thing, you know, I think they tend to rank things, some of them in their own head rather than in life. And some of the things that they think are, oh, this is pretty simple. Like there are hobby gamers who will tell you a game like Pandemic or Ticket to Ride is, you know, super simple. But if you've never played games like that before, they're not. Yeah. Like, they can take a little bit of time to learn right off the bat. Now, are they the most complex board games? No. But I think especially as you learn more and more complex games, your ability to recognize things on the lighter end of the complexity scale can get skewed to some degree.
Yep. For me, I tend to look at like the images. So under that whole title area, there's images that people upload. And so I tend to look at that to see the weight, like complexity, because you can kind of see like all the components and stuff. And it just has thumbnails of it. So you can see a bunch of different images. And from that, you can kind of, well, I've played a lot of board games, so I can kind of like get an idea of how complex it is from looking at the images sometimes. And I mean, you can also get a feel of other things from looking at the images.
Absolutely. I like the images as well. And I also like the files tab. Mm. In the files tab, it can be complete, like it varies from game to game. But a lot of times publishers will upload a digital copy of the rule book, which can be helpful if you're looking to quickly look up a rule or a reference and you happen to be on a digital device. Sometimes like reference cards or reference sheets created by the publisher or by people who have played the game might be there. Mm-hmm. And obviously, if you're downloading content that wasn't created by the publisher, you run the risk of getting stuff that is inaccurate. But I think for the most part, there is a rating system for the files. So there's little thumbs ups other people can give. And so if you look and see a bunch of thumbs up next to something, it's likely a good file. And I have found some really good like player references for complex games and things like that before. That have been beneficial, especially when I was playing a heavier game for the first time.
Mm-hmm. So do you actually like click on the tabs at the tier to go to the different tabs? Because I always just like scroll down.
It depends. Sometimes I scroll, sometimes I tab. Because I also occasionally go to the shopping tab if I'm looking for a game. Like if I searched for a game that I want to buy, then I'll go to the shopping tab and see like, okay, what is this game getting priced at? Where is it available?
Okay. But that's like right under the description usually, right?
Is it on the, on the main page? Yeah,
when you scroll down, it's under the description.
Oh yeah, that's true.
So yeah, I just scroll to see that.
I probably do too. I probably scroll for that one. Another section that I think I don't pay enough attention to that I think can be very beneficial is when you're scrolling down on the main page, there is a section on each game page that says fans also like. And it'll Toby show made you. That. Toby made it?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, because he used to work on recommendations at one of his old companies. And then so like we know Aldi from BGG, the creator of BGG. And so like he talked to him about recommendations. And then so he made a recommendations thing for Board Game Geek. And then, yeah, they made that fans also like section. So kind of like a recommendations based on that game.
That's amazing. Yeah. So yeah, yeah, like in this instance, for people who like Korra Quest, they also like games like My Little Scythe, Rhino Hero mm-hmm. Super Battle, Slide Quest. And like, mm-hmm. I'm looking at those and I'm like, yep, those all are games I also like and would play with my nephews. So like mm-hmm. that it makes sense. And so at least looking at this page specifically, I'm like, that seems pretty accurate. And it's, I think it's a nice way for people who are looking to increase their game collection or find mm-hmm. something new. That can be a really neat way to maybe discover something that you wouldn't hear about otherwise.
Yeah. I used it a lot when I was like starting to do free print and play games. Cause then like I found one. And then I scroll down and there's just like a bunch of other print and play games too. I'm like, oh, cool.
That's awesome.
Another thing I look at when I'm looking into a game to see if I would like it is back up near the description, there's a classification box that just has like a summary. It has type, category, mechanism, family. And so for Korra Quest, it has like type is children's, family, category. I look at mechanism a lot. So mechanism says cooperative game, dice rolling, line of sight, a bunch of other stuff. So I like looking at that to see like what type of game it is and if I would like it. So if it's like cooperative, I like that. If there's deduction, I'm like, okay, put that on my want to playlist. Yeah, so when I'm just glancing at a game, like I look at the ratings, sometimes I look at the comments, but like first thing is like mechanism, I look at that.
Yeah, I like the mechanism mm-hmm. and category ones as well. I also, for games that I already own, whenever I tend to look them up, I'm often mm-hmm. going to the forums mm-hmm. for each game because sometimes I'll have a rule question yeah. that maybe I can't find the answer for in the rule book. And it might be in the rule book, I just can't find it. And mm-hmm. so my first place to go almost every time is the forums for that game on BGG. And I scroll through and look and see if anyone has asked the same question. And in a lot of situations, somebody has, because if I can't find it, chances are somebody else probably couldn't find it either. And mm-hmm. it's nice to be able to see answers from other people who have played the game. And in a lot of instances, I've seen the designers of games responding in the forums, mm-hmm. specifically answering rules questions, which I yeah. think is really cool. Because when you get the answer from the designer themselves, like, well, okay, I guess that's the answer.
Yeah, because one thing you do on Board Game Geek is you can subscribe to a game page. So like at the top in like the big box at the top, you can click subscribe. And so a lot of designers or publishers are subscribed to their games so they can see when people post a question about it or post an update. So that's pretty neat.
Yeah. I don't utilize the videos section very often, but I'm really glad that it exists.
I look at it to look at the videos that I've made.
I mean, like, that's did it awesome. Show up? I'm looking at the videos and there's a video for Korra Quest, how to mm-hmm. play from 3 years ago. And Korra mm-hmm. looks so little and it's adorable.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's one of those things where there are probably a lot of people who play board games regularly who have no idea that Board Game Geek even exists. Mm-hmm. And it is a really good resource. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of other parts of BGG that we're not even touching on. Like, we're just talking about the game pages. But there's a lot of other parts of it that can be really useful or helpful or places that, you know, gamers might get some interesting information or even places to buy games. But I appreciate that BGG exists. And if it disappeared, I would be, like, really sad because there is no other comprehensive board game. Not library's not the right word. What am I looking
database?
For? Like database, yes, on the internet. Like it doesn't mm-hmm. exist anywhere else to my knowledge. Yeah. I think other people have tried, mm-hmm. but BGG started early enough doing this that they've been able to build it up over time.
Yeah. For my other hobbies, I always like want one for like I want one for jigsaw puzzles, but then there isn't that I know of.
You should start one. Tell me to build you a website. Oh my gosh, categorizing every jigsaw puzzle, I can't even imagine. Well, we would love to hear from you all. Are you a BGG user? A power user? Have you never been on BGG and this has inspired you to check it out? Let us know on social media or in our Discord. Link to our Discord is in the show notes as always, and we would love to hear from you.
And that's it for this week's Board Game Blitz. Visit our website, boardgameblitz.com, for more content and links. This episode was sponsored by Gray Fox Games. Tsukuyomi's back on Kickstarter now. This fantastical asymmetric no-luck miniatures-based strategy is better than ever with 4 expansions. Pledge or late pledge for Tsukuyomi Amaterasu Rising today to get awesome exclusive extras. And as always, you can get 20% off non-exclusive items at grayfoxgames.com by using the code BGBLITZ24 at checkout. Join the Blitzeteer community on Discord for game nights, discussions, and more by following the link in the show notes. Support the show by leaving us a rating and review on your podcast provider. And if you like us a lot and want to support us monetarily and get some cool perks, check out our Ko-fi at ko-fi.com/boardgameblitz today. Our theme song was composed by Andrew Morrow. Until next time, so I showed them all a game in the middle of game night with a big black box and a chair for me. Bye, everyone!
Bye!
And that's it for this week's Board Game Blitz. What are the... I don't know why I messed up there. I was thinking like something weird about week, but it is... We are in a week. Okay.